Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight we are going to be taking callers, and I'm going to say this several times throughout the hour, is that we will be taking you your questions or your comments. Please dial 424-258-9318. And right after the introduction, push 1 and you will be in the queue and I will be able to see your telephone number that you would like to ask a question. Today we are going to be talking about mental health, spiritual solutions. Wow, what does that even mean? We think and we look back on the history of mental health over the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and people were kind of, oh, that crazy person down the street. They just went off, and one day we just didn't see them anymore. Or those other crazy people, well, you know, they're just they're at that place on the top of the hill. We all know those places. My grandfather used to work in a place called the State Hospital where a lot of these people were, quote, put so that they would be out of the way. And, you know, so many times when we think about it, we say, what is mental health? But we look at it and compare it to physical health. Physical, it's, hey, it's okay that we cut out some organs, we burn you to smithereens with some kind of whatever for cancer, or we give you some drugs that will take away your pain and make you feel just great. When it comes to mental health, we think anything off of the normal is called a problem. It's called illness. It's called, you know, you're stirring up society, you are causing trouble, you are not supposed to be doing that. And we think about that. What exactly is that middle of the line? And the middle of the line is called what is expected, what is acceptable, and what is required to toe the line in the situation you're in. What do you do when you just don't want to lie anymore? You don't want to cheat anymore? You don't feel like going to that job anymore? You just don't want to always take the drugs or drink the alcohol like everybody else anymore? What if you just want to say, gosh, everything that everybody's doing, that's not the middle of the line. They're way over on the other side. And why am I over there? Ah, today my guest is Cortland Pfeffer. Again, his book is Taking the Mask Off, Destroying the Stigmatic Barriers of Mental Health and Addiction Using a Spiritual Solution. Cortland, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this is a great time for you to share about your book. So thank you so much for coming on.
You got it. You got it. I'm glad to be here.
So, Cortland, don't you think that it is rather, what exactly is the middle of the line anymore these days, right?
Right. We get caught up in that word normal, that we want everybody inside this box. It's almost like a bell curve, if you will. There's, you know, 96% of the people fit into this, you know, the normal range. And if somebody's outside of that, it's we get scared and we're afraid because they challenge everything. One might say, you know, Martin Luther King was outside that bell curve. He wasn't in the normal box. He said, you know, black people should have the same rights. Back in the day, that wouldn't be considered in the normal range. Or Gandhi saying we should be peaceful. Anybody who fit in, Mother Teresa saying we should love people even if they're even if they're mean to us, be kind to them anyway. How crazy is that? These people might all be on medications in the state hospital these days, and then we never would see the change in the world that we're supposed to. So I think instead of wanting everybody to fit into this box and be the certain way, we should embrace everybody's individuality. I'm not like you, you're not like me, but that's perfect. If we were all the same, we as a society would have major weaknesses, and we're trying to get everybody to be the same, and that's dangerous. I mean, you cannot expect the same thing out of everybody. Everybody has a different past. Everybody has different genetics. Everybody has different likes and dislikes. And if you are, like, if you like doing something, like if a little boy likes dancing or something, and he's told, no, you can't do that, that's not normal, then he stops dancing, he represses that, he's angry. What if his dancing, it brought him happiness, it brought him joy, that he was nicer to everybody as he grew up, he was a happier person, every relationship he was in then would be different. But we're so busy telling people how they have to be, they repress who they really are, and that's where the mask comes in.
You know, I think sometimes our mask is also considered our label. I can remember so many times as I've grown up in the 50s and 60s that a dean would call me in and say, you're not going to be good a representation of the profession. You need to drop out. And of course I didn't. Didn't know what it meant then, didn't bother, whatever, you know. And I went on and, you know, that was for dental hygiene and cleaned over a million people's teeth by now, you know, in the 45 years that I was working. Then also in naturopathic school, I had, again, the same thing. You're not a good representations profession. You need to look at that. You should drop out. And it was like, why? What's the deal here? You know, and I think so many times I've had that in my life. And as you and I on our paths have learned, is that sometimes that's a reflection where they wanted everyone to be, quote, into the fold. In other words, if someone is the leader of the gang, the dean of the school, the father of the family, or the CEO of the business, everyone should be in the fold. They should represent them. They should be their followers. They have no brains. They have no thoughts. They are their memes. Or in, as we would say, or their peeps, and they are pretty much on the herd effect, you know. Everybody's going to be in, we're all going to be doing it together, and this is the way it's going to be. And I think it's really only been in this last 10 years where people have said, I'm not interested in that kind of label or that profession or that job anymore, right?
Right, you don't, I mean, the problem, I think, they might do it. People think the way they do, they'll be safe, and people are afraid,
right.
and we say all doctors have to be this way, all boys
right.
have to be this way, all girls have to be this way, all whatever it is, and it's really the voice, then it comes into our head. It's not our own voice we're hearing, it's the voices of the people that were around us when we grew up. It's coaches, it could be teachers, it could be in voice, and it's not even our voice, and that's the biggest part of healing and becoming who you truly are, is stopping that voice, that inner voice that isn't even yours, and that's what meditation will do. It's clearing out that garbage. These thoughts in your head isn't even real. It's not you. It's not who you are at your core, and so many people tell us who we want to be and who we should be, and they or a lot of parents lie, and if they don't,
yeah.
the child. But
ooh,
there's not.
We keep losing you, Cortland. We keep losing you a little bit of your words. So
okay.
We'll just keep going, and we'll see how that goes. Maybe
okay.
if it happens to drop off, just hang up and call back.
Got it.
But also, too, I think that we have to say, is it an option to be vulnerable when really everybody, as you grow up, are learned to grow a thick skin? And it's only come of recent years we are saying we can let go of some of that thick skin or shield. I think over history has always told us, how thick can your skin get?
Right. I think being vulnerable is the key to happiness. That's being yourself. I think it would be silly to be vulnerable to absolutely everybody and tell them everything about you and right, because some people can take advantage of that in our society. But I remember when I first quit drinking, I was like, I don't know what to say to people. I don't know how
right.
I should handle this. But then the first time somebody came up to me and said, do you want to drink? And I said, no. And they said, why? I said, well, because I'm an alcoholic. And it felt so powerful. It was like, there, that's who I am. And I was like, it maybe made them feel weird, but that's not my issue. Maybe made them uncomfortable, but I like that line where it says, I will not omit pieces of myself to make you more comfortable. Yep, I'm an alcoholic, and a lot of people say, well, why do you tell everybody that? What are we going to be ashamed of? I think I should be proud of it. It's a fatal disease that not only will kill you, but will kill everybody around you, and it has a recovery rate of about 5%. And if you beat that, you should be proud, because on the other side of it, that means you were able to go through hell and get out the other side. And if we start talking about alcoholism, drug addiction, mental health, like it's not some big secret and such a scary, terrible thing, maybe more people will be more open about it. I was so afraid to go to the doctor and say, yeah, I'm depressed. And then when I finally went at the end, towards the end, I was ready to just be dead. And this one doctor said to me, I think that you might have chronic fatigue syndrome. And I said, what is that? He said, well, you can come in and go to a group, but there's nothing we can do for it. And all that did is made me sure. I just told this guy I was feeling down and depressed, and that was his answer. Uh-huh. It's like and blew me off. And the next doctor I went to spent an hour with me. Well, even though he was already an hour behind, he knew my name. He said, hey, I'm running late. Changes people and being able, he allowed me to be vulnerable, that second doctor, because he sat down and said, let's talk about this. He was already an hour behind, knocked on the door, said, I'm running late. He pushed his computer away from him. He looked me dead in the eye and said, I don't care. I'll sit here all day and talk. So the way he reacted to me was completely different. And so then it just came out. But you know what? That second guy, he probably got in trouble for seeing me too long. Because you're supposed to see a patient every 15 minutes to make money, 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 money. He didn't make money that day, but he saved my life. And so that to me would be true production. And that we got to allow each other to be ourselves. And if we don't do that, we are actually robbing humanity of the gifts our true selves possess. We're being somebody else. And in being somebody else, we're actually robbing the whole world of the gifts that we were given.
Let's talk about the correlation of the spiritual awakening. I would call it just, hey, coming to thoughts of who you really are. Also, how they correlate with times in our lives, 40s, 50s, or 60s of our life. And also the times when people just start pushing drugs. I had a dear friend who had said that all along in his life, his goal was to create this life that was in contrast to how he was raised. In other words, he wasn't going to be poor. He wasn't going to be in a small house. He wasn't going to have all this, that, or the other. So we created this big other picture. And when he got it all, and then he started to say, okay, now it's the end of my, working time, he started to become depressed. Well, he really was just realizing and phasing through life. We love to put a name depressed on it just because somebody steps away or somebody's reflecting on their life or somebody's looking at something differently, or maybe someone's saying, well, those things that I saw before aren't really there anymore. And then when you have breakthroughs where you say, oh, well, yes, I'm taking my medications, blah, blah, blah. And then one day comes along and you say, oh, my gosh, I got tickets to this game. My entire life I've wanted to go to this game. And you get really excited and everything. And they say, oh, now it's mania. Now we need to put you in and you have to have another drug. And now they put you with bipolar.
Yeah.
And you go, holy crap, am I ever going to catch a break here? And that's the truth, is that that's a perfect example of, can you look at yourself and go through this process without being, quote, locked up? How many, come on, Cortland, we know this. People will away.
That's hard. That's hard. That's what's hard to, that's the, to go through without getting a label that you get put on.
Yeah.
I think it's looked at like romantically, like it's this wonderful thing. And it is on the other end, but I think that it's actually a pretty destructive thing, a process. It's a painful process because you're walking around life thinking, you know, I know what this is. I know everything. You've got all your opinions
right.
and you formed all your ideas and all you've gained all this so-called knowledge and you just know all these things and you're so proud of yourself and you pat yourself on your back. And as you start to awaken, you're like, oh, I was wrong about that. I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
A spiritual awakening is actually losing all the knowledge you thought you had. It's not gaining mm-hmm. anything. It's losing all the false ideas, all the false beliefs. And you kind of, it's kind of like, what the heck? I've been living my whole life thinking this way and I've been wrong. And so it's kind of, mm-hmm. it is kind of depressing. But we don't have to look at somebody who's going through recovery goes through that if they're doing it the right way. Everything changes, your environment, your family, all your relationships change. If they're not, you're not really doing it.
That's right.
And well, but the great thing about it is then you find out who everybody truly is. Like you find out who your real friends are, or you might be friends with somebody who you weren't before, or you're mm-hmm. closer, and you come out on the other side, but it is painful. And if we take everybody and label them as, oh, of course you're depressed, you're going through a major life shift,
right.
and your soul shifting, everything's changing, why wouldn't you be depressed? That's a normal reaction.
Right.
You're going to put a pill on that. And we have such a copy and paste profession of psychiatry mm-hmm. and mental health where I go into the office and I'm depressed. The next doctor that sees me gets 15 minutes to see me because it's all about money, money, money. And he's going to say, oh, this last guy said he was depressed.
Yep. And you know what's the worst part?
The
worst part, Cortland, is when you go in too many times, too, you end up with another prescription. You end up with another diagnosis, another CPT code. And Lord knows where you can be. And I think sometimes what you and I have both encouraged people on this radio show to do is stop and look at different options. Stop and see who you are. Stop and write things down, journal things out, ask other people questions of different professions to see if maybe what you're thinking or what you're feeling is that different option in life, right?
Yeah, there's many options, and what might work for me might not work for you. I could go to a therapist.
Right.
I could think he's great. You could go to a therapist and think the same guy is awful. We are all different. So what I like to say is our masks are all uniquely created based on our genetics,
right.
how we grew up, our society, our inner voice. So every one of us, if we're going to remove our mask, it's going to be a unique removal of the mask because it was uniquely put on. It's special, just made by our special surroundings. And so if we're going to take it off, it's going to be unique. The only thing that I would say is the main ingredient in anybody's mask removal is human connection, true, deep human connection. That is required for anybody to go through this. But all the other stuff is going to be different for everybody else. That pills might work for somebody for a short time, but we can't just say, oh, this person's bipolar. I remember one guy going to a state hospital and getting upset and getting mad, and they said he's bipolar. Like, he just got locked up in a state hospital. Of course he's mad. If he wasn't mad, he might be
right.
sick. He's mad and he's sick. I mean, you guys are nuts. And then it just gets copy and pasted, and that sticks with him for life. For a natural reaction he had from having a life shift, he's now labeled something. And that's why people are so afraid to go get help and then be vulnerable, because it's scary.
Yeah.
Because who wants to have this label? Because people don't treat the human. They treat the label. Now, not everybody, because there are some great people in the profession. I wouldn't be here if there wasn't, but they're few and far between. And they're all leaving the profession when they should be leaving.
Yes. You know, Cortland, we are seeing this now where I even have another guest coming on in a few weeks, and it's an MD who's going to talk about the suicide risk in the physician's profession. They know this is not right. They know, as they are having their own awakenings, they're having their own spiritual forms, they're having their own struggles with being the conformist And the profession is crumbling like crazy. And so he's going to come on and talk in a few weeks. And another earth shaker, you know. Here we think the people we go to know all the answers. And I think what we'll be doing this summer on the radio, too, is shaking that to the core. No, not everybody has any answers. All we can do is be there, allow you to be who you are, and help guide you. We cannot do it for you. We don't have your answer. So many times people would call and say, you know, myself being the naturopathic physician, they would say, oh, well, I have this, this, and this. Can you fix it? And I'm like, no, I don't fix anything. I don't have solutions, you know. And it takes people aback to say, what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm. I hate to say it's this, but I hope that the that it does crumble, that it does crumble.
Yes,
the whole
I do too.
Doctor thing. Now, I mean, do you think? But there are some great. I mean, the guy that saved my life. He's he goes against the system, and there are those people, and I think they're the ones who are going to change it, and they have to. But they have to be willing to take the risk. A lot of these doctors think, well, it's become about doing paperwork and talking to insurance companies, and I can't even prescribe the meds I want. And that's part of the problem, so hopefully that does fall apart. But also, I can see why somebody who goes into being a doctor, I want to help people, I want to make people feel better, and they end up doing insurance forms, and an insurance company and pharmaceutical companies are telling them how to do their job. They really don't have any control. They've become like a puppet for these big corporations. But there are some people who fight against that and rebel against it. But the burnout rate then becomes so high for those people who are fighting against the system. And those are probably the ones why there's such a high suicide rate for it. And you have residents working 80 hours a week and not getting paid anything. It's terrible. The whole system, it needs a lot of fixing.
So, Cortland, again, we are going to be taking live callers in just a few moments here. If you'd like to ask a question or a comment, please dial 424-258-9318. And after the blog talk introduction, please push 1 to be in the queue. Cortland, we do have a caller. Are you ready to take a caller?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hello, this is Dr. Jeanette and Cortland. Welcome to the show. Would you like to ask a question? Hello.
My name is Danny. I'm calling from San Antonio.
Hi, Danny. How are
you? Hey, Danny.
I'm good. So, Cortland, I'm reading your book right now, and I have to say I'm quite inspired by it. I in recovery myself, I think the big book was helpful for me to get sober, but your book's been really helping me really get into recovery and taking it to the next level, and it's just connected with me on many levels. So I want to first say that I'm really connecting with it. I'm about halfway through, and every page is resonating with me. The story keeps me interested, but then all the details and what's going on behind the scenes has been pretty powerful. What I'd like to ask you, though, is along my journey here, my struggle, you talk about removing the mask, but what happens when it's it feels like it's stuck, and everything I do, the mask keeps coming back, and I keep going back to my old self. What would you recommend I do?
That's a good question, Danny. The mask, it does come back. It's when recovery from both faith and if you relapse and failing, but you're not failing. And the mask really is about being yourself and finding out who you truly are. And you think of a baby, a 2 or a 3-year-old, if you know a 2, 3, 4-year-old, they see their parents walk in the room. They, hey, I love you. I love you. They don't care what the heck anybody thinks. If they're in a grocery store and they want something, they'll tell you. They just love and they're pure and innocent. And that's what the goal is, to get back to that. And it's possible. And if you don't know who you are, because a lot of us don't. The mask gets started to put on by the time we're 2 or 3 years old. Hey, Johnny, stop dancing. Stop singing, little Billy. Or stop playing with trucks, Sally. Or whatever. Those are stupid examples, but that's just how it happens. and just continues and continues and continues. And so I remember when I first quit drinking, I thought, I don't even know who I am. I mean, so what do I do? And the answer to that is, what is your soul? I mean, what makes you happy? Do that. I like coaching baseball. I like teaching. I like helping people. What makes you smile? And some people say, well, what? I don't know what that is. Okay. Well, then try everything. If something sounds, I remember when I quit, I was like, you know, I'm going to go to a play. And I went to this play, and that's something I would have made fun of long ago and said, this is, but I loved it. And I didn't, and people then would say, okay, what's wrong? You're going to plays now. And mm-hmm. that kind of makes you retreat back into that mask. But that's the time you'll get resistance. When you start being yourself and being your true self, you're going to get resistance. And people are going to say, well, you're changing. Well, you're not being yourself. And that's only because they want you to be that way because it makes them more comfortable. And if somebody only accepts you for the mask and the false self, that's why relationships change. That's why then you move away. See, when you're your true self without your mask, certain people are going to then not want to talk to you anymore because they benefit from the false self. Or some of them might be scared and not know how to react to it. Some of them might think, well, is this really what they want? But you're being yourself. And so of course, when you start changing, you're a little more depressed. So people think, this person's changing and they're depressed. So somebody that might care about you might think, well, you're not really happy because you're, but they don't, they, that's what where being vulnerable comes in. That's where you talk about it. You just, if you see something that interests you, hey, I like music. I'm going to do something with music. I'm going to learn a lesson. It could be anything. And you will know. You'll know who you are by how you feel when you do something. Like I don't feel good mowing the lawn, so that's just not my thing. But certain things really get me going. And like I remember going to therapy, and I told my therapist, I said, I just don't like, I keep talking about this stuff, and everybody's like, I'm sick of hearing the same stuff. And he said, why don't you just write it down on a blog and just write it? And that's how this whole thing started. And I'd never written a thing before in 5 years ago. It just evolved. One of my therapists, he said he likes doing woodworking. It just happened for him. He just started doing it. It's different for everybody. And putting it back on, that's going to happen. You go to work and people say, what are you doing? Or your old friends say, you're acting different. So what? That's when the time is. You're going to get resistance. And that's actually the hardest part about recovery.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Cortland. I appreciate it. I know early in the book you made a comment about a children's story or children's TV show called Goosebumps, and it's a show where the girl puts on a mask and then it gets stuck to her, and after reading it I actually watched the show with my daughter and noticed it, and that's kind of where I feel I'm at right now, is where at first it comes on and it feels good and I get to be everything I always wanted to be, just like this character. And then she realized, I don't want this anymore, but it gets stuck to her skin, and I feel like that's what's going on. I want it off, but there's just such strong resistance right now, and it's hard.
You know what, too, Danny, what I've noticed, I've had the same experience over the past 10 years of my life, that's how we've been doing these shows, is that I also found that it might have felt good, and then you say you put your mask back on. Well, whatever you might have put on at that time and it felt good, you've now changed, and now you're on to the next thing. So in other words, you may say, I love cutting grass. It just like brings me to the earth. It smells so good, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't fit me anymore, you know? And the answer is that, okay, cool. Now you're on to the next thing. So in other words, we have so many different levels of where or what we would like to do or be or experience. It's sort of like we're going back to the beginning of our life and experiencing all these things that we missed or that we thought we liked, and then all of a sudden we say, okay, I just went through that. Now I'm on to the next thing. What will it be? And say that that's a great place to be. I really think that's important to say it's a great place to be there, because you can filter through 10, 20 things in 6 months if you wanted to, or it could take you 6 years to do one. I mean, I had what I call the abyss. Every time I talked to somebody for like 2 years, I kept saying, I feel like my stiletto is stuck in the door and there's an abyss. And everybody would look at me like I had 10 eyes. And I mean, everybody said, how are you? And that would be my answer. Finally, I started saying, fine, okay, whatever. And then I realized what I was saying about being stuck in the abyss was a better place to be. Saying, fine, okay, whatever, was not a good place to be. So honor whatever comes up and then phase through it and go to the next thing, you know? But those three words, okay, fine, or whatever, if you find yourself saying those, say, this is not, something's not right here. I'm not allowed to be vulnerable. I'm not allowed to tell the truth. I'm not allowed to be in my space, whatever it is. But just kick those damn words to the curb, you know, write them down. Say, these don't resonate with me anymore. They're out of my life, you know?
All right, well, I appreciate it. I love the show, and the book's great, and I'm glad that I found it. I'm glad it got sent to me, and like I said, I wish it was up there with the big book. The big book helps you get sober, but this book has helped me kind of what next? What happens now that I'm now that I stopped drinking? Now what do I do? And I know I'm not alone as we talk about this with my with my support group, and we get in this, and this book has been helpful for all of us.
Please listen, we have the next 20 days on this same station on Blog Talk Wellness Radio, my show. The next 20 days, we're going to be coming at, we're coming at mental health, physical health, spiritual health, angels, all these different things. You may find something in there, and they're all free, and they're all archived links, they'll be. Just pick one and listen to it and say, that sounds cool. Oh, I got that. Or something in there will resonate. So just, you know, follow our show, and you should find something else there, and it'll help. Cortland's been on before. Go back to one of his other shows before, you know, too. There's a lot of information out there. You just have to kind of scroll through.
Yep, thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling, Danny.
All right. You're welcome. Bye.
Cortland? I think we lost Cortland. Yeah, we did. Let's see.
Hello?
Cortland, are you back on? I lost you.
Yep, yes. Hello?
Were you able to hear our conversation?
Yep, yep. I heard the whole thing, yeah. I was in queue.
Okay, great. So I think, you know, that is important too, to know that you can, you phase through these things pretty quickly. So like if you really wanted to play baseball and you couldn't when you were little, you may play it for 2 months and say, hey, you know what, I don't know what I was thinking, I got to phase out of this. And you go on to something else.
Yeah,
right?
But that's the fun part about it. A lot of people find that depressing, where, you know, this is, well, the way I look at it is, like, if you have a child who's in a dysfunctional family and they're being beaten, they want to be there. Even they don't want to go to a foster home that might be safer, because they know the dysfunction, at least. They don't know what's, it's like on being on the top of a hill and on one side and not knowing, why are you taking a jump into this complete abyss, as you call it. But the beautiful part about it is it's like starting with a blank piece of paper. You can make it whatever you want. That's the beauty, is you can do whatever you want. Follow your heart and all the things. You wonder, why am I depressed? Why am I depressed? Because you're living somebody else's life. You're living somebody else's dream. Mm-hmm. You're doing what somebody else told you you should do. And now for the first time in your life, you're freeing yourself from all that, and you get to do what your heart says. And that is what you are meant to do. And when you're doing what you're meant to do, you're going to be happy. Otherwise, it's like you're swimming upstream. If you're always swimming upstream, you're going to drown. People
but you know
against
what too,
the flow
Cortland?
Of who they truly are. Yeah.
But also, too, Cortland, many people have been under the concept that, you know, oh, if I have too many jobs, people will think I can't hold a job. No, that's not true. You're just going through things to see what you enjoy. You know, that whole concept of... you do all these things, but you're a master of none. I think that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, jack of all
I think
trades,
it's so much fun.
None,
yeah. It's so much better.
It is.
To be,
why
your
do we
finger
have to be,
in everything?
Yeah. Why do we have to be just one thing? Why do we have to be just one thing? Why can't we be a yoga instructor and we
right.
teach music lessons and also a social worker or something? Why can't we do all that? Why can't we
yes.
be everything with our, and you know what? I like to coach baseball. I like to write. I still like to work. And you know what? I'm one of those people that switches jobs. I like to do
right.
it because I want to see everything. I want to see how different systems work, how different people work. And I get bored. And so what? That's who
mm-hmm.
I am. And again, that's who I am. And if people don't like it, that, you know, what am I going to do? That's just,
yeah.
I have to be true to myself. It's not like I'm hurting anybody. I'm trying to,
I
still explore. You watch a little kid explore.
That's right.
They explore everything. That's what we should do. That's how we find ourselves. And when you find what makes you happy, do it.
Courtland, let's take another caller.
Okay.
Hello, this is Dr. Jeanette in Courtland. Welcome to the show. Would you like to ask a question or have a comment?
Yeah, I just want to say that I've been following Taking the Mask Off on Facebook, and I share a lot of things and like a lot of things. But I have a question on like a different like aspect, I guess. I'm kind of seeing somebody go through, she's one of my friends, and I've been friends with her for a very long time, and I keep seeing her go through, she's going down a path of no return. Like, she's doing a whole bunch mm-hmm. of drugs, she's drinking a lot, she's got a kid, and it kills me to, like, see her,
mm-hmm.
like, go through it, and she doesn't see that she's going through it. Like, I don't think she knows, and every time I try to make a comment, it's, you know, she doesn't, like, really listen to me. And the hard part about it is, like, I know her whole backstory, and you know, she's been through so much, like, in her life, with her mom and her dad, and, you know, I don't need to get all into it, but, so I think that's kind of why, more or less, she's floating towards that path, and so I guess I was just wondering how I can help her in a way. Like, I don't know if there's anything that I can do to help her.
Courtland, don't you think, too, sometimes people choose their paths, and it truly is ours just to observe and to support, but not to try to change it?
I think there's a lot of layers to that. That's a tough question.
Uh-huh.
Because every situation is unique, and when you have somebody you care about going through that, it can be devastating. You see, I was on one end of it where I was doing it and not really realizing all the damage I was doing. She doesn't think that her friend sees that, and she probably doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say is, while I was going through this, I had a lot of people kicking me because I was probably hurting them, and calling me names and saying, "You're doing this on purpose, bad person." And I'll tell you, none of those people are the ones that I remember. The people I remember are like my friend James, my brother, call them psychological life support. While everybody else is walking out of the room, you got certain people that hug you when nobody else, when you deserve it the least. That's the people that you remember. And it's really hard to love somebody who you see doing damage and to just force help down their throat and tell them, "This is what you got to do." It's going to push them away. What happens is, if you are there for them and you are the one hugging them and the one loving them and the one supporting them, guess what's going to happen? They're going to trust you a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then, when the time comes that they want help, guess who they're going to come to? You.
Mm-hmm.
Because you didn't judge them. You didn't. And, you know, it's easy for me to say now, but people can, when you're doing damage around you and people, it's destructive, it's a normal human reaction. Be like, "I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it." But when 100 people are, I remember the one or two people that weren't. And, when I was ready to get help, that's who I wanted to go to, because I knew they wouldn't judge me. They wouldn't come at me. And so it's the Thich Nhat Hanh was my favorite author. He writes about helping the hungry ghost. And it's about, you know, somebody with a large belly but a small throat. They're very hungry, but they don't really trust, so you can't feed them a lot. If you feed them too much, it's like a balloon, it'll pop. So you give them a love, and then they might push you away. Then you go away, then you come back, give them a little bit more, give them a little bit more, and then it's all on their time. And all you do is love, encourage, support. Of course, if somebody's in danger of themselves or other people, you do something. But it might sound corny to people, but it's really just about giving somebody love and support, mm-hmm. because nobody grows up saying, I want to destroy my life and I want to destroy my child's life and I want to. Nobody does. No, and that comes from trauma and pain and fear. And I think a lot of people that get involved in that don't want to be their true. They realize all this is fake, and they drink to, you know, just forget about it. And then they become addicted to that feeling of escaping. Or they might connect with people when they drink. So they're addicted to the human connection part of it. But I remember one story somebody told me. She said, you're all in this room and everybody's talking to this person who was drinking, and they're all like, you got to do this. Everybody had their turn, like lashing out at this intervention. And as she left, this person stood up and said, and gave her a hug. And that's how you do it. And it's not going to happen on our time ever. And of course, if the child's in danger, you do something, but you really just call somebody and say, hey, I think you need to do this. Because you're not going to switch until you're ready. But part of it is, like I said earlier, we're so afraid to be vulnerable and open up and ask for help. But when we are, what helps is knowing that there's somebody there to listen. And if everybody's kicking us, we're never going to ask anybody for help. So really just encouraging, supporting. And if you see something good, like the person doesn't drink for 2 days, and you see them, hey, I noticed you're alert today. What's going on? You seem so happy. And, you know, you see something positive about them. Always say something positive if you see it. I remember when one of my friends died. I mean, I remember we were sitting around talking about all these stories about him, how great he was. And I thought, none of us ever said this while he was alive. Never leave a kind word unsaid, ever.
Thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah, it does a lot. I'm trying to support her, I guess. Like, I don't want to support her doing those things. So do I just, do I tell her, you know, like I've been telling her, because she'll say, like, I'm really depressed today, and I'll say, okay, what's going on or whatever, and try to, like, maybe get some more information out of her. And she,
that's
I don't
perfect.
Want to talk about
that's-
it. I don't want to talk about it. And then I say, call me if you need anything. I'm always here for you. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, if you ever need anything, my phone's always on. Like, is that type of support I'm trying to give to her. I hope it works.
That's perfect. That you couldn't do it any better. And you're not, if she fails, you're not failing, because what you just said you're doing is perfect. I mean, the person, what I feel like they're doing is, by saying they're depressed, is they're testing. They're seeing what your reaction is going to be. And there you're going to say, oh. But instead you said, well, what's going on? And so they're like, okay, they're curious. But they're not quite ready to take that next step. And then by you saying, okay, well, let me know, then you are opening the door to do it again, which what you just described was a perfect interaction, I think. And that is how you help people. And if the person doesn't get help, then they weren't ready. But when they are, they'll come to you. You couldn't have, you can't. That's the perfect way to support somebody.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your input and all the stories. It helps me a lot. I hope she does get the help she needs eventually.
Me too.
Well, thank you so much for calling. You can continue to listen to the show.
Thank you.
If you know what, too, Courtland, is that I have been on the other side, too, just as the guest has said, you know. I was the one who would always be taking them back or bringing them in or helping them and everything. And there's been many times where I would say, okay, this is enough, and you can't do that. And then I would have to put them out. So you do have to tote the hard things sometimes. But let's say a few months after that or a year or two after that, when they ask to come back, I let them come back, and we start a new plane. We start a new process. It's not, well, you did it before, I'm not going to do it again, you know, that kind of idea. So
right,
I think it's really important.
We have to get away with this punishing.
Yeah, it's really important to just, as I said to the caller, you know, is to be in observance and do the best you can. Be in observance means you stand and you listen and you're present. It's almost like, you know, when people are at end of life, they say that they see an angel. That angel is standing there in observance. When we see, you know, when somebody's born, the doctor is standing there in observance, you know. In other words, there's people there that are meant to witness the events and to help guide you through. And I think that's the most important thing. We aren't there to pull them through or to make those decisions. We're there to guide them. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's really the most important thing.
I think helper or not, helper and person who's in need, whatever. The most important thing is the relationship. It's not I know everything and you know nothing and I'm the authority figure and I'm up here and you're down here and I'm going to punish you. It's a relationship, and it's basically the best way I can describe it is they're driving the car. You're in the passenger seat and you have them and you have the map and you point things out and say, "Hey, maybe try this. Hey, maybe try that." They can say no. But if they say no, don't yell at them and say, "Screw you, you don't know what you're talking about," and try to take the wheel. It's their journey. You sit with them, and you know what? They might fall. And if they fall or relapse, it's not a failure if you learn from it. You gain from it. So how is it a mistake if you learn from it? So you're in the passenger seat. You point things out. They go their own way. When they're ready, you know what? They might do something that you might not want them to do, but they also might – that might be their journey, and they might be good at it. I have a problem. I have this problem myself. I always tell my daughter what she should do and how she should do it. And she'll tell you, okay, dad, okay. You know, but you know what? I make that mistake sometimes because she's gonna do things differently than I am. And she might, that might be her path. And so I want her to do what's best for her based on what I know. And I see when she's making mistakes, but those are lessons she has to learn, and maybe for wherever she's going to go in life, I have to watch. And sometimes that's hard, but sometimes she might do things that I might say, okay, I wouldn't do that, but that maybe that's who she is. And I have to learn to, you know, pull back a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do.
Let's also talk about the part where when people really need to be able to depend on someone, you know, I've had this repeatedly with several acquaintances and family members where they wanted to go off and do their own thing, but in a way, they kind of still need to know that you're there. So in other words, I was helping one that was in recovery, and I would do text them in the morning, say good morning, and that night say, "Oh, how was your day?" That was my way of checking in the morning and checking in at night. And if I didn't get a response within 24 hours, I knew there was a problem. But they agreed to that because they felt that that was something that they would like to hear. They wanted to know that someone was going to ask if they were okay, ask how their day was or anything, and didn't have to be judged by that. But they also knew that there was a lifeline out there. And I think that's important, is that we know that there's a lifeline and that they aren't truly alone, right?
Right, and that there's somebody there who's not going to judge you or who's just going to be there, and when you need help is going to be there. Just saying, I think it's important to have that person who will say hi to you every day. You might be hungover one day, or you might be doing bad. That same person's always going to say hi, or they're always going to say, "How you doing?" That's powerful. That it seems like it's just saying hi, but it's an extremely powerful thing.
Yeah, it's almost saying, "I recognize you're here today," you know. How many times do people say, you know, in really busy cities, they get up, they go on the subway, they go to work, they get home, they this, that, and the other, and they said, "I don't think anyone's ever asked me how my day was," you know, or no one ever says, you know, or recognize that they were there.
All the time. And people are going and they're doing their thing and they're doing their workouts and we're go, and nobody slows down to just say hi and recognize people. there's a few, and people like that, I think they're just simply magical. They can look, and whoever they're with at that moment feels like the most important person in the world. And it's people that do that, they don't realize it, and they don't even see it, but just saying hi and taking time, you're changing the world. And the people that do this think that, oh, it's no big deal, but it is. And you don't see it. It's like it has this huge ripple effect. And I think what happens to people is we say, well, I try to do these nice things and I don't see and there's no results. So what's the point of doing it?
Mm-hmm.
That's not why you do it. That there is results. Say I'm having a bad day, which I've had, and my head's down, and somebody says, hey, how you doing? And they pat me on the back. That changes my whole perspective. And then the next person I interact with, instead of maybe being crabby with them, I'm nicer to them. And then it just keeps going, and the positivity keeps going. And you see then these people who are like that, every time, every group they're around always lightens up. And they say, well, they don't. It's just simply magical. And I think if we all did that, the whole world would change. But we're all too busy.
You know, I think it's the funniest thing because, like I said, I did dental hygiene for all those decades. And every single patient, this is from the start in the 70s, every patient, I would look directly into their eyes for about 5 to 10 seconds, you know, while you're putting their chair back and getting ready to start to clean their teeth. And it was just, it's just something I always did. And I caught myself a few years ago and said, man, I miss the eyes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really miss that connection, like with 30 or 40 people a day that I used to do, you know. And I know exactly what you're talking about.
It makes a difference. So, I mean, look, I think of, I go to the same, not down there. It's the morning, it's always the same one. And there's a reason why. Because the guy there makes actual conversation, and he's like, and I didn't even notice this because I'm like, I don't want to talk in the morning. Sometimes he's like, how are you doing? And he notices when I change what I get. And he's like, he talks about regular stuff. And after a while, it's like, oh. And you feel like it's just, that's what we need. And it makes a big difference. It's where we go back to. It's like, we want to be around people that always want to know how we're doing and always care. And it starts with a high, but it's like, first it's a high, then the next time they're there, it's like, oh, I noticed you wear this shirt of this team. Do you like this team? And it's just, that's the human connection we need, but it's lost today. It's just lost.
Yeah. And I think, I'm not so sure it's going to come back so quickly. I think we can do what we can, but we do the best we can, actually, that's for sure. Cortland, can you share a little bit about how this book came about? Because this has not been your path, apparently, from the beginning of your life. So what crisis brought you to all of this?
Well, let's see. The book, what happened was, like, I mean, I was going to therapy when I had quit drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my therapist and saying, you know, I keep talking about the same stuff over and over and over and over again, and people get sick of hearing me, and then I get mad because they don't want to hear it, and they think I'm talking about it too much. And he said, let's write it down and do it. Never written anything before, and I did it, and then I had written, I remember I was sitting and my brother came and gave me this book called Fear from Thich Nhat Hanh. And the first three things I read in it was, you will die. You will get sick. Everything you hold dear and close to you, you will lose someday. And I thought, well, that was really nice. I'm more depressed than I've ever been, and he gave me this. But I was so drawn in because I thought, actually, if I think like that, I'm going to act differently. We pretend like people aren't going to die, but they are.
Right.
And if we actually realize we're going to die, we might cherish every moment a little bit more and treat each other a little differently. I mean, if you act and just pretend like for a month, I ask everybody to do this. I'm like, and just see if you're acting differently, you're going to be happy. And so then the story is he gave me that book, and then I was like, and then I wrote this long email to my family, and I showed it to him. He's like, no, don't send that, but that'd make a good book. And so that, plus the therapist telling me to write things down, and then people started following the blog, and it was like I wrote one, and then somebody said to me, write something like nobody's ever going to read it. And I said, okay. And then I wrote about my friend dying. Next thing I knew, there was, you know, like 600 people that didn't like that. And I was like, okay. And then it went from there. And then the book happened. It was just kind of, it was not planned out. It just happened. And then I thought back, though, to my childhood. And my brother reminds me of this, too. He's like, I used to write little books all the time when I was like 5 and 10 years old. Like I wrote a book about the Care Bears when I was 10 years old. And I used to make movies, and I used to, like, we had a video camera. My dad bought a video camera, and I always used to make plays and stuff. God, I did. I used to always do that stuff, and I had completely forgotten about it. And it's like I was reminded of that true self again. I like what I said when I went to that play. You know, I had a five-year-old son and making plays, and, you know, he called, like, oh my God, that was, you know, it's, I start to remember, I lost it. So I just came full circle. I became a child again, basically, without caring about anybody telling me I can't do that.
You know, I think it has been a long path for many people. For many people in the world today, it's really been a long path. It has been hard. Life as we remember, because now we have a lot of ancestors that can tell us the stories, we remember how hard it is. And I think really only if you went through the 90s do you think it was fun, holly, jolly, and everything was great. But if we look at some of the other decades, they weren't that easy. They were pretty hard, you know. And I think sometimes when we keep taking so many hits, we say, oh, I'm just over this. I need some pleasure. Oh, I need relief of pain. Oh, I need to feel something different outside me. And I think that's where the tendencies towards being finding a diagnosis, or let's find a drug, or let's see what kind of addiction I can round up, or what can I start taking to get myself out of that place, so that I can feel better, I can feel rested, I feel I'm okay, I feel that I'm all in one piece and I'm not going to fragment at the first sound that I hear or something that someone says. And I think that is definitely where we're all at now, is I almost feel like the human psyche is what's taken such a hit that it's almost shattered itself, you know?
Yeah, well, I think you absolutely are 150% correct. And we're looking for that and I'm looking for, there's a magical, this is going to be the answer. And it's never the answer. And I used to say there's no magic pill.
Right.
But I realized there is. There is. The magic pill is you. That's the magic pill, is you. It's inside of you. It's already there. You might need help finding it. That's what therapy is for. And sometimes medication does help along when you first go through therapy. And we all there. I do think medication can help people. It's just way overprescribed. But there's not going to be some special diagnosis that's going to change your whole life. The only thing that's going to do that is you.
Yeah, but also, too, to accept that there is ebb and flow to life. Life is never permanent. Life is never permanent. Whatever job you got when you were 18, you won't have till the day you die. Will. The only way through life is up. All of these things that we have been told and banged into our head is not true. And I think it's very hard to let some of those go.
Well, we want everything. There's no, it's not going to be perfect ever. It's just, it ebbs, like you said, ebbs and flows. There's not, you don't reach the mountaintop and say, I got there.
Yeah.
I'm there. I have terrible days. I have terrible weeks. I have terrible months. I have terrible, quarter years. But you take a couple steps. You keep going because you realize that nothing lasts forever and everything is important. Even though the worst things that have ever happened to me I thought at the time were the worst things, always brought the greatest lessons. So I would never exchange them for anything. The worst things that have happened to me, I remember being in the hospital thinking I lost everything. But then I thought, I actually feel more free than I've ever felt in my whole life. Because
that's right.
It was all gone, and I thought that stuff was what I needed, but that was the stuff pulling me down. You learn from these things. Something may seem bad in the moment, but it's not necessarily bad. It's leading you to something greater. That's why we just got to keep going, keep doing our daily stuff, and believing in ourselves, and you will see the lesson if you want to.
And I think these people and these gurus that are out there professing, you have to walk on coals to be a person. You need to fake it till you make it. You need to constantly disassociate with all these people around you are the ones that you need to be running from. You know?
Fake it till you make it is a bunch of crap. Be sad.
Yeah.
It's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be sad. There's nothing wrong with that.
You know, and I think it was Sunday. It was really raining here. And I said, why am I just in such a, I call flat line mood? I just didn't feel happy. I didn't feel sad. I just felt heavy. I just felt, I don't know what it was. And then towards the end of the day, and I said, this energy is not mine. This energy is not mine. And I said that over and over again, and it lifted. You know, and I think, too, to understand that we can have a moments like that. It's just what we do with them that makes the difference. And to not disallow it. If you're having a really super crappy day, say you're having a crappy day. You know, I remember texting a friend of mine, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. I said, you know, I this is just not something I can do today. And she texted me back and she says, I'm having a really grumpy day. I will get back to you tomorrow. And I texted her back and I said, Yahoo, that's the most fabulous thing you ever told me. I said, because I did
that's
too.
Real.
So I know it's not. I know it's not us. I know it's just the energies out there, you know. It's just, hey, maybe everybody's having a bad day today, and isn't that great? Instead of suffering in silence that you're not perfect, share that you're just feel like everybody else.
Yes, that is what causes more sadness, is holding it in and not talking about it. And you can learn from it if you're like, why do I always feel like this when I'm around this person? Or why do I feel like this in general? Anger is being upset. People who are discontent with life usually change things. Martin Luther King was discontented, healthy. He was healthily discontented. If being unhealthy and discontent, then you're just mad. But how about every time I'm around my job, I'm upset. Every time I'm at my job, I'm upset. That's why you, like you said, don't disallow it. It can, your emotions can teach you something. How come every time I leave a conversation with this person, I feel like a jerk? Then it's going to learn.
Right.
You're going to learn something. But if we repress everything, learn anything, and we become more depressed, and the emotions just keep building and building and building and building, and then it all falls apart.
You know, in Cortland, in closing, let's also say this too. If you leave a job, it's not because of you're a wrong person. You're leaving a job because you're going to something healthy. You're not leaving it because you didn't fit and you were broken. And I think that's important for relationships also. If you leave someone, it's because you're leaving to go to a healthier you. You're not leaving because they were a pain in the ass. You're leaving because you want to be a healthy person and to remember that.
You have to. Moving on doesn't mean moving on to a different job doesn't mean you failed. Sometimes it means you've grown out of it. That's all. And you have to do what makes you happy and what makes your soul happy and what makes you the best you can be. And sometimes there's going to be pain through that, but you cannot beat yourself up over that. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Let's talk one second about family members. When things don't work out, sometimes we can say that those family members, it's what's kept us in has created our mask so thick that they almost splash paint on it every day. You know, and really when you try to feel differently about yourself, they will rebel like nobody's business because they are vested in it. They are vested in you upholding the family name. They are vested in you appearing as you're their child or their adult or whatever, you know, or their kids. They are vested mm-hmm. in the outcome and the feedback. So really, many times people will disassociate from their family members until they feel that what they really want or what they really know in their life, and that's more valuable than anything, yes?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Sometimes that's the hardest thing is you get into these roles and people around you expect you to be a certain way, and it almost creates this homeostasis, you being the kind of dysfunctional, goofy, not healthy kind of makes the group better. But then you decide to change the rules and I'm going to be different now. People don't like that when you change the rules. People do not like it. That means if you take if you change, that means the whole group dynamics have changed, whether it be family, a group of friends, whatever. They have to change them. The whole system is out of whack. So they benefit from putting you back into that role. I don't think people do it purposefully, but hey, if this person's throwing things off and they're challenging the dynamics of the group, we got to push them back into that role. And maybe after a while they'll say, no, let them be them. And that's a true friend or a true family member. But maybe if it continues, you have to walk away and maybe come back later. But if people cannot accept you for who you are and for you trying to be healthy and change, you have to walk away. And that can become very hard if it's family. When you go through this, you might be lonely. You might be extremely lonely because you're going to lose a lot of your whole group. Your whole environment's going to change. And when you try to hang out with those same people or try to be with the same family members, it's just not the same because they're trying to push you. And you almost become that old person around them. And you have to, it's almost like, you have to be isolated for a little bit. And I think that's why so many people go back. The isolation is scary because we're taught to, you can't be alone. Well, you can't. And some of the greatest people that ever lived have spent a lot of time in isolation.
And also, too, when you do disassociate sometimes from the lineage, your ancestral lineage, is that you sometimes might be the keeper of secrets. You might be the one that holds it on all together. You might be the one who is really is starting to learn that those things that are going on shouldn't be going on. And when you try to say, I no longer want that, they're afraid you're going to speak out, so they will go at every attempt. It's almost like a devil kind of a satanic kind of thing that they will go after you at all costs to protect you and keep and put you down because of that.
Well, because of fear. It's one of the main rules of dysfunctional family or group dynamics is do not air dirty laundry publicly.
Right.
And if they're afraid you're going to expose things and talk about things like whatever it may be, they will jab and pull out everything they can to protect themselves. And I don't think it's out of being malicious.
Mm-hmm.
People are afraid. Raise it all out there. People are stop being afraid of it. Everything will change. I think they mean when they say we hold the key.
Yeah.
And say, fine, this thing happened. It's screwed. Let's press.
Yeah. Cortland, we have one last caller. Do you have time?
Okay. Yeah.
Good evening. This is Dr. Jeanette in Cortland. Welcome to the show. Would you like to ask a question or have a comment?
I just have a comment. I've been listening to this blog, and it's been really excellent. And I just had a comment about, you know, disengaging from family members. You know, I was when I was younger, when I was a child, both of my parents were alcoholic, and I remember, you know, going to therapy and attending Al-Anon, and you know, as a 20-year-old, everybody, you know, was telling me, you know, well, you have to change. You're the one that has
right.
to change. You can't change them. You have to be the one. And I remember sitting in a therapy session years later when my father was passing away, and the therapist again, you know, kind of sat there and said, well, how can you accept these things that are going on? What can you do to change your attitude and change the way that you deal with things? And I you know, looked at him and I said, I am so sick of people telling me that I have to change. I didn't do anything. I haven't done anything. And so I never really understood any of that. And I never really did disengage from my family. But as I'm older now, I'm 8 months sober. And I realized that, you know, when you change and when you become healthier, when you're doing the things that you're doing for you, you can then go back and look at the people in your life. For me, my mother and father, and I can look at them, and I'm truly starting to look past all of their masks and all of their family histories and all of what made them be who they were, and I'm truly starting to love them. I realize now, you know, my mom is still alive. She's 13 years sober. Which to me isn't a long time. I'm 36 years old. So to me, it doesn't seem like very long. But every time I see her now, I there's more love there, and I see into her more deeply, and I accept her more for who she is. And I see the pain, and I see her as a child, and I'm accepting her more and more. And when I do that, and after I leave from seeing her, I realize how much healthier I'm getting, and that everybody was right all along, and changing yourself and getting yourself healthy and looking at things from a different perspective really can change how you feel about people and really help you to connect with people. And it makes you feel really good, like you're getting healthy, and then on top of it, you're able to make them feel good as well, and it's coming from your heart.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. I hate when therapists say that they put it back on you. But it's true. It's absolutely 100%. If you change how you approach things, and how you feel about things. And you almost get to a point where at first there's anger, and then you feel a little injustice. Why do I got to change, like she said, and why I didn't do anything? And then you change, and you start to, I think you get past the anger, and you start to look at these people with compassion. Earth was born to hurt you, and nobody meant to hurt you. Their pain, they had pain, they pushed it onto you. Now you push it on, and it continues and continues. And they say it takes 5 generations to break the cycle, but somebody does it. Somebody brave and somebody courageous and somebody with a great spirit stops and says, no, I'm not going to continue the cycle of pain. And what that means is they have to take on all their hurts and all their pain. They have to understand it. They have to still say, I can't do anything about that. I'm going to change myself, and I'm going to come back with love instead of hate. And that, in essence, changes the world. If you can look at some, even though they may never see worlds, and it takes a lot of courage and a lot of bravery, and that's what a recovery is about, is seeing not only yourself as that child that was lost once, but some of these other people who hurt you were also once children, who something happened to them where they got lost, and they may never get there. But you can still give them love until you start to hurt yourself. That's what exactly what recovery is about, right there.
Thank you so much for
yeah.
calling. Do you have Go ahead.
No, nothing else. Thank you for the response.
Yeah, and you know, I think so too. Courtland, can we speak for a second about when those parents may have been in that situation? And you can love them and accept them, but you love them, but you don't always have to accept them if they're still in those places either.
No,
you know,
no. You didn't know if somebody's still hurt, if somebody is still hurting you, you have to walk away. Or if being around somebody, you can look at compassion from, you can have compassion for them from a distance. Like if I keep going around somebody and they keep hurting me, calling me names, making me feel like a jerk, talking about all the bad things I did, I can.
Yeah.
You have to separate yourself from that, and you can still love from a distance, like detach with love. You do have to walk away sometimes, but sometimes you don't, and sometimes you can go back. But you have to take care of yourself. There's that boundary where it's like, am I losing part of myself? Am I sitting there giving this person all this compassion and they're just jabbing me? Then that's when it's time to walk away, and you can still care for them. And I think of it, I've said this before, like crossing this bridge, and on one side it's dirty and mucky and rainy, and the other side it's beautiful. You get to the other side, you can't force anybody over it. If you go to force them, you're going to slip. You just have to encourage them, and while they start crossing that bridge, you just have to be there for them. But if somebody is continuing to throw stones, you got to walk away, because you got to preserve yourself. Because if you're not healthy yourself, you can't help anybody. And if you're always getting beat down and damaged, you're no good for the world and for yourself. So you got to be careful of that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think in the beginning when Al-Anon and the family one and everything started up in the 80s, they were all saying that the alcoholic person would say, oh, you need to go to a meeting. You're the one with the problem, you know. And that used to be that was very real in those decades, you know. They would start saying, you know, the Al-Anon family or the child or whatever would go to counseling because it was everybody else's problem, but it wasn't the person who was the drinker, you know. Or the same thing with the drug addicts, you know. It was always everybody else, but it wasn't you, you know. And
right.
I think where all of that stigma kind of came up is, you know, when people are saying, why do I have to go, when it's really you, you know. And then so in theory, it's really take the word off of it, alcoholic of the family or whatever, and just say, I'm taking care of myself, and drop out of that attachment or judgment to the whole situation in the first place.
Yep, you have to do that sometimes. And every situation is different, but sometimes the family member helped. The family member helped. So they make the addict. They make it is kind of a family tumor. We're just children watching their parents as alcoholics. They didn't cause their parents to be that way, but it's a whole group dynamic, and really, I think the basis of Al-Anon, and that is to learn to know how much compassion you can give, and you can love somebody but not really love the behavior, and maybe you can still support them and love them until it starts to affect you, then you walk away. So I think the whole group, it's very easy for us to say the addict is the one that needs help, when sometimes they're part of the problem. That's like taking a car and fixing one part of it and then putting that part back on the whole broken car. It's a whole system problem. There's many times the addict goes into counseling and therapy and gets better, and they keep going back to the same environment, and then they keep relapsing. And why is that? Because I think the best treatment centers now will take have to be a family member, but an important person in that person's life, a support system, treat that person too, so they know what's going on. But it's really not anybody's fault. It's really all from a bunch of pain and a bunch of people repressing and holding back. And if when one person does it, sometimes other people do it, but there's so much to it. Like sometimes you do have to walk away. And sometimes you can start to go back in a little bit more with a little more love, with a little bit in change, but you have to be ready for it because people are going to try to push it back to that old person. People want you to relapse. They don't do it purposely, but subconsciously, sometimes people want you, and they'll do whatever they can, as you said. So, I mean, every situation is different. It's a system. It's like look at the addiction crisis. It's killing people. It's costing billions of dollars. People going to the ER, the hospital. It's causing medical problems. But we keep it legal because it makes a lot of people a lot of money, and we don't care how it affects humanity.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think right now the world is just looking for these pain squelchers, and they will go at any cost. Now that the drugs are getting restricted, they're going to illegals, and, you know, it's right on to alcohol now. Alcohol is everywhere, you know? And it's crazy because CVS, the drugstore, you know, said tobacco was bad, and they took it out. Now, this past month, they said that they're going to move candy from away from the front because it is so bad for kids. You know, they didn't want them to have it in their face. But yet, when you go to the register at our local CVS's, there's six lanes of just booze. You know? So, hey.
Well, yeah, because they got the money. They got the money. They will pay the... they will pay the people who are running for office. Don't make harder laws on booze. Don't make harder laws on booze. In Wisconsin, you can take your 12-year-old kid to the bar, and they can get drunk as long as you're with them. But they won't pay for you to go to inpatient treatment. I just learned that this weekend for my brother. So I was like, it's ridiculous. They have money. They're going to pay for these people who do run campaigns. So they give you $1 million to run for office, and they say, don't you vote against booze. So let's put it all over there, and it destroys not only lives but people around it, and they don't care because there's people making a ton of money off that. To add the dollars they have, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, Cortland, we've come to the end of the show. Could you share information with the listeners about how to find out more information about your blog and your book? That would be great.
Yeah, my book, you can find it on Balboa Press, BarnesandNoble.com. It's there's a spiritual solution written with me and we write mostly for Wake Up World now. Something on our blog, but go ahead.
You have a Facebook. You have a Facebook post too that you write on.
Facebook, yes. I'm taking the mask off the Facebook page. It's just taking the mask off, and mask off is with all capital letters. We write on that quite a bit. So we do what we can there. So.
Absolutely. Well, Cortland, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think, I'd like you to come back again on in September, because when the kids get ready to go to college and they start to learn that what they were told, what they are thought, and what they are experiencing is a whole ball of wax, it's different. I think a lot tend to maybe make some choices that aren't the best for them. So we'll be repeating and having Cortland back again in September. So thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you to speak about this.
Yeah, thanks. It was great. We'll talk to you again.
Yeah, very good. If you'd like to find out more information about Cortland Pfeiffer, again, his book is Taking the Mask Off. The link is on the bottom of today's show page, and you can find out more information about his website and connect to his social media. And it truly is about asking for help, asking for questions, saying, I don't understand this. I want something different. I don't want to be pushed down. I want to express myself. I want to be the person I've always wanted to be, and say that if something happens, all's going to be okay. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher with Wellness Radio. Please do check us out and follow our shows. We have at least 20 more shows on mental health and wellness the month of May 2017. In June and July, we'll be talking about physical health and how we can make better choices with the professionals around us. September, we'll be talking about getting back to school and, oh my gosh, all the issues that will be for all the millennials and all of the other people that will be in that age group, and then also the parents who have to deal with some things that they really weren't prepared for. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been such a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.